Oh, and there we go. Welcome to the March CPIF and IRCP call for 2013. I'm your host, Chris Montero, and on with me today is Randy Menninger. Is that right?
Menninger.
Is your last name?
Menninger.
Menninger.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Randy. So why don't you start us off with the program, and then stay tuned at the end for some announcements about the IRCP conference coming up in May.
Okay.
So take it away.
And Diana Rorick, are you on board?
I am. I'm right here, Randy. I got your back.
Okay. Diana, I asked her to join us today. She is the director of the home care in the region in which we serve, so she's on board with us today to bail me out when I get in trouble here. What I've been asked to do is just kind of give everybody an update of one of the community paramedic projects that we've been working on and that we've implemented. And just to give you some background information, the hospital in the area that we serve is a level 2 trauma center. It's about, Diane, how many beds total? Do you know?
I think 180.
180 beds. On average census, they probably run 100, 106 patients average. And our county that we serve is about 40,000 in population. Ambulance service is full paramedics. We have 5 ambulances, and we average about 4,200 calls a year of everything put together. We started working with the hospital and with the home care department actually about 2 years ago, knowing that several things were happening in our industry. Number one, I think that EMS, which instead of being emergency medical services, I think we've got to change that to essential medical services. That was just the soapbox I'll get off of now. And I think we're going to have to be part going into the future of healthcare as far as prevention. And I think we're going to have to be tied in closer with hospitals and with our home health agencies as we move forward. Over the past several years, we have seen patients that we are taking into the hospital on one day and then watching them get dismissed and then readmitting them within a week or two after they've come from the hospital for various reasons. One of the things that we found out was in most cases they didn't have their discharge instructions and didn't know really what they were supposed to do once they got home to help with their healing process. So we looked at two things. Number one, how can we, as emergency care providers, how can our paramedics be more involved with the day-to-day health care of the individuals? And maybe in between calls, how could we help those patients so that they are not readmitted to the hospital within 30 days of discharge? And then the other thing that we started watching was the hospital looking at all their calculations and everything of how they're getting reimbursed and finding out that the reimbursement that they get a year from now, part of that calculation is what was the patient satisfaction in certain areas? How does that equate into payment for the hospital? And if it doesn't reach above a certain level, then they get paid less. So what we did was we sat down with our home health care agency, looking at what they were doing and what our paramedics were doing. And we run some data and some numbers, knowing that our nationally, for pneumonia patients, the readmit rate in 30 days is like 18.5%, and our congestive heart failure is 24.7% on a national average, and our hospital, respectively, was running 14.2% on pneumonia and 22.7% on CHF patients. We wanted to get that number, even though we were below the national average. We felt the need that we needed to look at ways to get that reduced. The second thing that we looked at was the patient satisfaction scores. And one of the areas that the hospital was not meeting the mark that they had set was in the patient satisfaction of dismissal. And we had a bunch of theories of why that was happening, but we really didn't have the data to prove one way or the other. So Diane and the director of our home health care and I went to our patient and family services. We went to the nurse educators off the different floors of the hospital. We talked with them about putting together a program in which the discharge nurses and the educators would help work with our paramedics and help us to understand their discharge summaries, help us to understand their medication reconciliation, and help us understand what tools were going home with the hospital or going home with the patient so that we could become part of their healing process and eliminate the readmit in 30 days. Our goal was to decrease hospital readmit in 30 days by 20% and increase patient satisfaction on discharge by 25%. The group in general was pretty positive about it. And then we took the information to our chief nursing officer, and she's a VP at our hospital here. And Diane, I would say that her initial was respectfully guarded. Would you agree with that?
I would agree.
Okay. She was guarded because part of it, she was thinking that our paramedics were trying to work into the home health care arena, of which we've got an excellent home health care department, and wasn't quite sure at that point where our scope of practice was leading, and if indeed was it a change in scope of practice, or where did we really fit into the equation. So we... Diana and I, and again, Diana Rourke is the director of the home health agency, we presented our proposal to three of the vice presidents, of which one of them was the chief financial officer. And just going down the avenue of, you know, if readmitting to these patients is being such a cost burden to the hospital, then if we can be part of the solution to that and keep them out, then at some point that may have a monetary value, and it's good patient care, and it should increase our patient satisfaction, especially with discharges. With the three of those vice presidents in the room, their comments back to us is, what do we have to lose? We really see we have everything to gain, and, you know, let's put it together and let's give it a shot. Well, that was a good motivation, great motivation for Diane and I to keep working through the project. And then they threw at us that we would need to take it through the IRB or the Internal Review Board. Now, I don't know under EMS if anybody's familiar with that. To be honest, at that point, I wasn't real familiar with an internal review board. And so what that group does, bring everybody on the same page, is they look at the program. They dive in to see if there's something out of scope. And if there's something policy procedure that has to be changed, or if it's actually a research project, or if there's something that's using a medicine or some type of equipment that really is not designed for the initial purpose that it was intended for. So we learned a lot in submitting to and presenting to the Institutional Review Board, and believe it or not, the Review Board approved our project 100%, and again came back to us and said, we don't see anything negative about this. We see everything positive. So Diane and I then took and started working with our chief nursing officer. And it was just kind of fell into the right place because she was working on one of her master's thesis. And this fell in line with some of the things that she was working on. And what she did then is went to the University of Nebraska and asked one of her professors if they would be if they would watch over the program and make sure that everything that we were doing fell within the right parameters, so that when we get done, it would be, one, publishable, and two, we wanted to make sure that everything that we did was very meticulously documented so that somebody else could duplicate the project. So we proceeded through that. We then went back to the hospital operations group. Now that's all the vice presidents and the president of the hospital. Presented to them. We got 100% buy-in from them. We went back to our paramedics, and we went back to the home care nurses and presented the programs to them, got buy-in from them. And then we started working with our discharge planners and our patient and family services in how we could work with them through the project. What they came up with was that this project would be okay, but we wanted to make sure that the patient was making a conscious and commission as far as signing off consent that they would allow us in their house. It's one of the things that we had to overcome in doing our home visits. And let me back up just a little bit. What our goal was to see pneumonia patients and congestive heart failure patients, primary or secondary diagnosis, that were admitted onto one floor of the hospital. And upon discharge, we would see them within 24 hours of discharge, and then we would visit them in their home once a week for 3 more weeks, or a total of 4 visits, which would take up the 30 days. So that's what our program objective was as far as how often we see the patients. The discharge planners, of course, asked us to put consents together. So we did that, and we asked both for commission and omission, saying either they did want it or they didn't want it. Legal was directed from the hospital, and the hospital paid for the legal to do that. So we have the consent form that was put together, and then we made sure there was a little bit of indigestion as far as medical records and everything being transferred from the hospital to our paramedics that weren't involved in the initial care of the patient. So to overcome that, we went through the hospital, our paramedics went through the hospital orientation and through all of the HIPAA training right beside the nurses. So that everybody knew what page we were on and that we were following the same hospital rules. Picking up a lot of wind noise. Are you guys picking that up?
Yes.
Hello?
There, you're clear.
There
you go. Sorry, I muted the person. and just so everybody knows on the line, there is no web content for this presentation. Thank you.
So after our patient and family services worked with us on getting consents and everything, then we put together a brochure of when actually the patient's first admitted into the hospital. They go over the brochure with them of this project and whether or not they would like us to help them with their healing process over the next 30 days once they're discharged out of the hospital. We do not visit people or patients that qualify for home health. If they're already into the home health program and they qualify for those, then that program is going very well. No really need for us to dip into that or to muddy the waters there. We do not see the patients that are being dismissed into a skilled nursing center. And just so that we could manage the first part of the project, we only look at patients that are in the corporate boundaries of our city. So if they're out in the country or in the far rural or remote areas, those patients are not part of our project. After putting those items together, then we actually just got the program up and running about on the 18th of, well, we're at 30 days now. 18th of February was our kickoff. And so the patients from the floor, the discharge planners identify those. They sign off on a consent form. That information, they follow the same process as what they were if a patient qualified for home health care. And that information is then faxed to our home health department. The home health department then takes a look at those, and then they are actually splitting with us 50-50. So one patient goes to our paramedics, the other patient goes to the home health nurses. So we're doing several things. One, we're working on our two goals of keeping patients from being readmitted back into the hospital and decreasing that by 20%. We're working on increasing discharge patient satisfaction by 20%. But we're also looking at skilled, proven, tried and proven home health nurses that have been in the field forever. They are taking these patients and going and visit them the same way, 24 hours after discharge and then once a week for the next 3 weeks. And then the next one comes to the paramedics. So we have a nursing component that's visiting the patients, and we have the patients that the paramedics are seeing. It gives us a couple things. We can look at the data to see if we're really meeting our objectives, but we also have a component of if the patient benefits by having the home health RNs, or are they getting the same care with the paramedics that are in the field. And so we'll have a comparison to do on those also. The other thing that has been very valuable is we've been meeting every other week. Our paramedics meet with the home health nurses, and that has opened up a dialogue that has never been there before. That's allowing our paramedics are learning more about the disease process that the patients are going through. We're learning more about the medication reconciliation and the medications, and our home health nurses to even the playing field and try and get all of our data in one place are actually using the electronic record provided by the state of Nebraska, the same ones that we use for our ambulance trip forms. So we've customized that, and the state of Nebraska has given us a special license to put just our community paramedic patients into that mix and into that record. So that allows us to be able to pull the data out a lot better. And it's really been a positive thing both for our nurses and our medics to one, see what each other's done, and to learn from each other. We're almost coming up with a hybrid care provider at this point. Diane, you want to add in anything there?
I think that the two really positive things I could expound on are that this is providing, I think, very beneficial care for patients who Randy and I felt would definitely fall through the cracks. If they didn't meet the criteria for home care, the only people that would be seeing them again would probably be the paramedics bringing them back up to the hospital because of their lack of understanding of disease management. The other thing is, as Randy alluded to, finding that there is a community resource that we had not even thought about partnering with, but have, and have learned from, and it's all very exciting to be a part of this. It's very beneficial, not only to the patients, but to us, to see another aspect of what we can do in our community. And I foresee it expanding, Randy. I'm sorry, but I think it's the patients. I'm seeing the list of patients that are out of the area that we've set as our parameters, that we could definitely, I mean, if we'd expand, I think we'd be very busy.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And one of the things that we're tracking is the patients that don't meet the criteria for this project that we're doing that are outside of the corporate limits. We're tracking those and seeing if they readmit, and we already have several of them in the last 30 days that have readmitted. So, so far, the ones that we are seeing in the program, they have not readmitted yet. So And I'm feeling pretty comfortable with the ones that I've been involved with, unless something happens really, out of character. I don't see them readmitting. I think we were able to give them the knowledge and the help them out with some tools so that they don't get readmitted. But I agree, outside, at some point we'll have to expand, and we're already being asked, can we expand it to our orthopedic patients and, the ones that are going home, after total knees or hips, because some of these don't qualify for home health and don't qualify for the PT to see them afterwards. So, but I truly believe if we don't get a handle on a smaller aspect and be able to get our arms around it, we've got to be able to do this really well and learn and understand before we get it too big or else we've set ourselves up for failure.
Yeah, and I agree, Randy, so I'm behind you all the way.
That's a fairly fast overview. I would open it up for questions. I don't think I can talk for another 30 minutes, but I'd be interested if you have any questions or anything that we can, like I said, it took us 2 years working together to get the project, to get it started 30 days ago, so we've only been into it 30 days.
Okay, great. Any questions for Randy?
Randy, how are you funding this?
That's a really good question. Right now, the hospital is funding their part as far as the nurses that are involved and the paperwork on that end, and our ambulance service. Now, we've been in business since 1974. We are funding everything on our side right now. We do not have a source of payment, either through Medicare like the rest of you or Medicaid at this point. And I'm willing at this point to front that cost, because I think when we get done with it, the data will show that we've saved a significant amount of money for the hospital and for the patients. And so I'm looking at spinning it back towards this project will be of value to the hospital to help fund it, because we're keeping those patients from coming back in.
How many patients are you seeing a week, and how are you staffing for this?
Right now, we've got 7 patients in our program. What we're doing on the paramedic side is we send out an ambulance with a crew, and our goal is to catch them in between calls. We got a little tight on one day, but so far we've been able to do that. And from Diana's perspective, she's got 3 RNs. One of them includes her, that are seeing the patients. The ambulance crew, the paramedics, are seeing all patients on the weekends.
Okay.
Did you have to make any regulatory changes so that your paramedics were allowed to just visit and care for patients rather than transport them?
Our state statutes, in Nebraska, a paramedic has a very, very broad scope of practice. But last year, actually 2 years ago, we did go back because it said that our out of health care providers, our paramedics, responded to emergency medical calls. And so what we did is we got legislation to take out the word emergency. So now out of hospital care providers can respond to medical needs and trauma needs of the patient. It doesn't say whether it's emergency or not. So we did it. We did get that change so that we had a workaround, but we didn't want to go through a workaround. We wanted it to be very upfront and legit, and so that's how we're able to do this right now in Nebraska.
Right.
Hey, Randy, what was the education that you guys used to get the paramedics more education?
Several years ago, we received a HRSA grant through the Rural Nebraska Regional Ambulance Network, and that was about a $550,000 grant. That was over a period of 3 years, and through that, we helped fund Creighton University and the North Central EMS Consortium to put a curriculum together for the paramedics. That at this point has not been, the curriculum is done, but the EMS board for the state of Nebraska Department of Health has not adopted it yet. And one of the issues is because it doesn't really give you a license to do anything more than what you can right now. However, the education that comes out of that is immense because it goes more into the disease process. At this point in our project, the education that we have, the additional education has basically been what we have sat down and had trainings beside the home health nurses, and we've educated them on components of what we do, and they've been doing the same on the backside with us. So it's pretty much at this point, the education has been self-taught between the two agencies.
Randy, this is Jim from Mount Desert Island, Maine. I got a couple questions, but I think probably the easiest at some point before you depart, if we could get your contact information. We're a little different in terms of we've got a much smaller hospital here on the island, but we're looking at putting the program through, and right now there's a couple of us that are going through the Hennepin curriculum. But I'd like to touch base with you. Is your EMS service hospital owned and you operate out of that, or are they separate EMS services?
Our EMS is private.
Okay, okay.
So completely separate from the hospital.
Okay. And so are you – so you're staffing it out of your EMS services. Are all your providers – they rotate through both emergent and non-emergent, or do you have a select number?
Nope, they rotate through both.
Okay. And are you using all levels or just paramedic level?
At this point, just paramedics. Our goal would be to open it up. Of course, the EMT wouldn't have the same scope as a paramedic, but we see that there is a need in rural and frontier Nebraska that where some of the EMTs could be able to assist with some of these things and still remain in their scope. And then also, in those smaller areas, they're struggling with their volunteers in keeping EMTs, especially during the daytime. And so this may be able to allow us to open up for some economic development funds of job creation in Nebraska to help fund for some of that.
Right, right. That's exactly what our difficulty here is also in terms of the possibility of providing more job opportunities and call volume for some of our folks. Okay, great.
Correct.
And that'd be great if at some point you could just give us your email. That'd be terrific.
Absolutely. And my email is Randy, R-A-N-D-Y, dot Meininger, M-E-I-N-I-N-G-E-R, at rwmc.net.
Randy, Rob Baird, how do your paramedics, what kind of feedback are you getting from them?
Really good question. My older veteran medics are having some issues with it. My younger ones, you know, they're kind of seeing that with the changes in healthcare that this may be another opportunity. And one of the things that I'm working with them on is we're at that stage in our operation where I kind of need. I could use two more paramedics, but I just don't quite have the volume to do it. And I'm hoping that this will help just kind of put it over the edge so that I can help bring in more people, you know, create two more jobs so that we'll take some stress off of the other employees. What I am working with my older veterans is some of them are at the age where they're starting to get burned out and they want to slow down. And instead of looking at this as an additional duty to their day-to-day activities, this indeed may spin off that this may be an entire division all of itself that can go out and assist these patients. So it may actually, for my veteran, the ones that are kind of burned out, they're tired of teaching, mentoring, you know, they're just kind of in that bad stage. But they still love EMS. This may actually create an area where they can kind of step down a little bit and not have to be out at night at, you know, 1:30 a.m. in a blizzard, you know, working on a car wreck type thing. So a couple areas that I think I can work, that I am working with them on, but my older ones are struggling with it a little bit.
Thank you.
Diane, what about your nurses?
Nurses that are involved were, I believe, like our VP, a little guarded in their excitement. But once they've gotten out and they really enjoy it because it's different from home health in that we are fully making the patients responsible and accountable for their own care. And it's just a short visit, and the patients are so appreciative. That always gets to nurses. So I think they're doing fine now.
I have a question.
Yes.
This is Chris from Colorado. Are the paramedics and the nurses seeing the same type of patient, same complexity of patient? I mean, are they interchangeable at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes, because it's a random sampling for each. So it's just every other patient goes to either the paramedics or home care.
The only thing that, in fact, that's one thing that gets a little disturbing is because it's based off of their face sheet. So it doesn't say anything on there of what their history was. So like Saturday, I visited a patient that I wasn't really sure whether they were in the hospital for CHF or pneumonia. I didn't know that till I got to the house, because that information's not brought across at the front. And that way it's almost it's not a double-blinded study, but it's really all you have is the patient's name.
Randy, this is Diana. Do you think it would be helpful to discuss the algorithms that you developed?
We could. It may be better if we could send that out to the group electronic and just let them look at it.
Good idea.
Randy, if you send that to me, I'll send it to both listservs.
Okay. I can do that. Now, the only thing that may change of who sees a patient is, in our beginning stages, we didn't want either institution to have to add people to be able to do this. So that's one of the reasons why we limited it to the corporate boundaries of the city. And then the home care agency, they get stacked up, and their staffing is different on Saturday and Sunday, where our paramedics is not. So if a patient is discharged on a Friday or a Saturday, those always come to the paramedics.
And Randy, your funding, I know you said the hospital is taking care of the nurses. Is the EMS service staffing and is the rate approximately the same per hour for your paramedics when they go out on a CP call?
Yes. Yep. And just history-wise, I own the company, so it's directly out of my pocket.
Hi, Randy. This is Noah Smith from the Department of Transportation. I really appreciate you presenting your project here with us. I'm wondering how you and the hospital are actually measuring cost savings. Do they ask for specific information from you, or maybe how they're measuring the cost savings from the hospital perspective?
Sure. One of the things is I'll go back to everybody's documenting into the same electronic format. So we've got that. We track the time on task. We track the mileage to and from the homes. So we will be able to put, you know, cost amounts to each individual's. And then we are, it's also tied into the hospital electronic record through their record number. So we'll know whether those patients actually went back or readmitted in 30 days. And, of course, if they get readmitted in 30 days, the hospital doesn't get paid for that. The other thing that we're measuring is we can identify on the patient satisfaction scores on their discharge, because we're isolated right now to one floor, we'll be able to tell down the line here whether their patient satisfaction scores on dismissal are improving or not. So we've got those three markers that we're using to identify whether we're reaching our goals or not, and then we'll be able to take our, with my paramedics, they're all on the clock anyway, so if I don't have to bring in anybody extra, they're already on the clock. So I'm trying to work around that so that we're using them in between calls.
Thanks.
Randy, Peter O'Mara from Australia. With the satisfaction scores, do you measure satisfaction with the EMS service?
I missed your last part. Within what?
You're measuring the hospital satisfaction for the patients.
Correct.
Are you measuring patient satisfaction with your services?
Yes, we are.
And have you seen any improvement in that?
I believe from what the first 30 days has showed, the answer would be yes, but it's too early for me to jump for joy yet. But from what I'm seeing already, the trending is going up, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Any further questions?
There's one little...
I'm sorry, I've got one more question.
There's one little bump that we are hitting, and we'll have to work around this, but when the paramedics go out to see the patient, an ambulance pulls up in front of their doors. When our home health nurses go out and see them, they pull up in front with a car. So we do create... In fact, I have not been involved with one yet that we don't get calls from the neighbors wondering why the ambulance is out front. So we're going to have to do some education on that because, of course, my intent is to be able to use the paramedics in between calls to do these and not bring in extra people. So they've got to have the truck and the toys with them. And so we're going to do some public education, and we'll do a press release probably the first part of April. That'll go out, and that'll help educate everybody on why an ambulance is in front of their neighbor's house.
So, Randy, when they're on a non-emergent scheduled visit, and they are still going to respond, it's not another crew. They're going to respond for if you get an emergent call.
Correct.
Back to that patient.
Correct. And so far, we haven't had to pull them away. We are tracking whether or not on the home visit, whether or not our crew members were tied up and we had to send somebody else. But as of right now, we have not had to do that. We've been able to slide the appointment a little bit one way or the other, and so far that has not been an issue. At some point it will. It will come. But so far we've been okay.
Randy, this is Dr. Kohler from Alaska. About how far are some of your patients when they're discharged from the hospital? How far are their homes?
We limited it to the corporate boundaries of the city, so the furthest point's about 10 miles. So way shorter than what yours would be.
Thank you.
Now, if we take and expand it, like Diane said, outside of our area, then we're going to get 30, 40, 45 miles pretty easy around the center of the hospital. Right now, we're probably within a 10-mile radius.
Hey, Randy. Tim Hoffman from Kearney, Nebraska.
Hey, Tim.
What is your current caseload? How many patients have you seen in this last month?
Right now, we've only got 7 on our docket right now.
How many would you forecast, without changing your model, your current staffing model, how many patients do you think you could see before you would have to start looking at adding more staff?
We estimated that from our paramedic standpoint, we could see 2 patients per day, 2 new patients per day, without stretching it past what our current capability is. Now, of course, that exponentially grows into that third, fourth visit. Then it gets a little hectic. But we felt that with time on task and just being within the corporate boundaries that we could do two patients a day.
What would you say your average time frame is for a visit? How long are you at the patient's house?
Our paramedics right now are running about 33 minutes. Diane, what are you guys running?
1 hour for the initial visit and about 35 minutes for the other visits.
And I would concur that the first visit's longer. We've got some of them that are coming up to the end of their deal, so our average is probably in that 33. I think when we talked with some of them out in Reno, Nevada that were working on it, they were at like 43 and 44 minutes average. So we're probably pretty close, but a little bit less.
Awesome. Thanks, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Randy, what different assessments are you doing on the first visit versus the follow-ups?
I don't know if there's any different in the assessments. I have not seen that from our medics end, but the first visit is a lot of explaining of what the program is and what our goals are and making sure they're on board with us. But the assessment-wise, I haven't seen a different assessment off of the next two visit versus the one visit. Diane, are you seeing anything different?
No, I concur. I think the initial visit, we had a patient we brought on today that got out of the hospital this weekend, and he had 4 pages of medications that we have to enter into the system. So we're pretty fast at that, but that's time-consuming.
Yeah.
Other than that, it is. It's the beginning discussions that take so long.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, this is Julie from Nebraska. Hi, Randy.
Hey, Julie.
If you guys identify these patients need health aid services but they don't qualify for home health, how do you refer them for those types of services?
We have that built into our algorithm that, if X, Y, and Z, we can actually refer those back into the home health system. So we do have a process working with their physician to do that. And we've had one patient, and maybe even the one today was close, but that probably would have qualified for home health, except they didn't want it. But everything as far as what we saw, the patient probably needed it, just couldn't get them talked into doing it.
Okay, thanks.
Randy, what's the disposition of these patients after your 30 days?
Tomorrow will be the first patient that we've released after 30 days, and they'll do a survey for us of how they thought the system worked. But so far what we've seen, they're getting better every visit, so I think we've been pretty fortunate so far.
And then it'll be upon their own volition to contact you or home health if they need additional visits?
Actually, at this point, once we finish that fourth visit, we don't have an avenue for them to get us back into their house. So that may be something down in the future that we may need to look at. Right now, that component is not there.
So they'd probably fall back into regular EMS if they needed assistance?
Correct.
All right. Any last questions? Excellent. Randy, thank you so much for your presentation today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you letting us have the opportunity to talk about it.
All right, and if you'll stay on for one more minute, I have a couple of announcements. Just so everybody knows, we're going to IRCP this year at the Chesterford Grange in Warwickshire, England. Sorry about that. If you'd like to join us, May 20th through the 23rd. If you would like to do an abstract, please fill out your proposal and send it to office at
ncemsi.org. That's office at ncemsi.org. And those are due by the middle of April, and we'd really appreciate that. Also this year we're going to offer live streaming from the event. We'll send out more information as the date gets closer, and we really appreciate that. And we'd like to thank you guys for joining us on the CPIF call, as well as the IRCP monthly call for March 2013. And we'll talk to you guys next month on April 15th.
Hey, Chris?
Yes.
This is Julie, and I contacted the hotel over there, and they are full the second night of the conference.
Interesting. Hang on one sec. I'm going to stop recording and let's talk.
Thank you. Please stand by.